A chant will be led by Cees, and I'll let you introduce the chant, Cees.
Thank you, David. So I wrote this chant back in April. I went through a little creative spurt and was inspired by some of the writings on the Emerald Tablets. And Zin Uru is the name of the chant, and it's an Egyptian mantra. And like I said, it's preserved in the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. And these words are meant to cut through all illusion, invoking the truth of our essence as children of light. So no better realization than that, I think. So here it is, Zin Uru. So the chorus, I invite you to mute yourselves, but sing along. The words are pretty straightforward. I think you'll catch on to it relatively quickly. So we can chant the Zin Uru together, and then there's a couple of verses that I'll sing by myself. So, all right, let's see how this goes. Zinuru, 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 by the light it is done, you know we are the ones to let it in. By the light it is done, you know we are all one with all that is. By the light. By the light it is done. Oh, Zinuru, 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 Zinuru. Zinuru, 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 Zinuru. By the love it is done, you know we are the ones to let it in. By the love it is done, you know we are the ones to call it in. By the love within and all around us, by the love it is done. Oh, Zinuru, 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 Zinuru. By the light it is done, you know we are the ones to let it in. By the light it is done, you know we are all one with all that is. By the light within and all around us, by the light it is done. Zinuru, 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 Zinuru. Zinuru, 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 Zinuru,
Beautiful, Cease. Thank you. What a gift. I'd like to follow up this evening on one of the themes of our community session this morning. I'm going to see if I can find a slide. Here it is. On spiritual work. What it means to do spiritual work. And I'm going to read the 6 bullet points. First one was taking personal responsibility for your spiritual state. Second one was moment by moment awareness of the tone of your words and deeds. Third one is personal generation of a positive energy field. Fourth one, building a collective high vibration field of energy. Fifth one was participation in collective radiation of attunement current to the world, or by another name, high vibration energy. And the last one was not succumbing to negative energy undertow. So I would like to follow up on that and speak about spiritual practice in a very particular way. And so I'd like to speak about our words and deeds as part of our spiritual practice. So I want to present something on that and then invite you to break up into small groups to consider it together from your standpoint of your own experience. And then we're going to come back and have something shared towards the end. So that's the big idea here. I want to make reference to a talk that Martin Cecil gave, which I won't read from, but I want to reference it to you because you might be interested in looking at it sometime later. It's in the Third Sacred School in Volume 7. Volume 7 deals with health, healing, and attunements. And this particular talk was given on May 26, 1962, and he entitled it Controlling Thought Through Words and Deeds. Controlling Thought Through Words and Deeds. My guess is the average person who's been associated with the emissaries has never come across this piece. I can't say for sure, but that'd be my guess. It's just another one of these rather extraordinary spiritual teachings. And I would like to speak to it in my own words without trying to replicate what Martin said, but just sharing where I go with it and what is and has been a practice for me. So the big idea is that words and deeds or actions are an outer expression of something inner. So they're an expression of what we're thinking and what we're feeling. And I suppose beyond that, what we're spiritually motivated to do, what the creative urge in us has us do. So you could think of that as some kind of progression. Like you have something invisible that's a potentiality in the realm of source, and it moves into consciousness and then moves out through consciousness into what we say and do. And then if you think of what we say and do, there is the form of it. So there is the form of the words that we use and the form of the actions that we take. But there's more than that, really, because there's some kind of energy or spirit to what we say and what we do. People who study communication, for instance, I think they say that something like 85% of communication is nonverbal. So nonverbal are things like tone of voice, facial expression, body language, but it's also the energy or the spirit with which something is said. And I think I'm guessing we're all familiar with that, with other people, with ourselves, that there are those two things. There's what you say, but there's also how you say it, if you will, and the energy that gets conveyed. And in the same way, we experience that relative to other people, our own expression, but also when we receive things that are said by others, we are listening to the form of the words, but we're also tuning into the energy that's being conveyed. And the same goes with actions. Like, you can have somebody taking actions that are in some way right, but in another way, they're full of some kind of, destructive energy, non-creative energy. I'm guessing for everybody in the service here tonight that we've learned those things are important for us in our lives, and the distinction's important. So if you think of all the spiritual practices that you know, all of the emotional process practices you might be aware of, isn't it true that there's some prevailing philosophy about all that, or at least prevalent? Who knows? Hard to say if it's prevailing. But there's a prevalent idea that, well, if I change what I'm thinking, and if I change what's happening for me emotionally, then what comes out of my mouth and how I act in my world might change, and then what I'm manifesting in my world might change. And indeed, I think it's a biblical quote from Jesus, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. So there's a truth to that. What Martin is presenting in this talk that he gave is the idea that there's a discipline at starting at the outer end and then disciplining everything inside to produce your vision of how you want to be in the expression of yourself and the embodiment of yourself in the world. So the way that might work is that you have a vision of yourself and a desire to say things to other people that are creative and uplifting, maybe inspiring, maybe in some way enlightening. So if you have that intent about what you say to other people and you adopt for yourself a discipline of doing that, what happens is that what you are thinking begins to be oriented around, well, the question of, well, what could I say? So your thinking is now being disciplined by, ordered by your desire for what you want to say. Or if you want to do things that would truly be of service to the world around you and the people around you, you'll find that your mind starts thinking about that. And the mind begins to get reordered around that. And then at the same time, you'll find that there are things in your emotional realm which are contrary to your intention to be inspiring to other people or uplifting or enlightening or encouraging. You'll find that there are things that happen in your heart that on a given day, I don't want to be uplifting, or I'm ticked off at this person. They just did something I don't like. And they remind me of this thing that happened in my past, and, well, it always seems to go like this. And, there it goes. You know, the the heart gets embroiled, and then the mind wants to get off the discipline and go into some kind of reactive mode. So speaking about spiritual practice, the spiritual practice is to require one's own thinking and feeling to be disciplined enough to stay on the job. And there's kindness in the whole process, so it's not as if, you know, you're cracking the whip, which doesn't work very well anyway. Like my mind and heart don't respond very well to a cracking of the whip. So there's compassion and there's self-understanding. So it leads you to ask, well, why am I feeling this reactive feeling? You know, what are these thoughts that are coming up? In that whole process, there's also self-awareness or mindfulness, because you can't have the discipline and you can't practice the spiritual practice without an awareness of what's going on. So what's going on for yourself, what's going on in the world around you, you have to be interested in noticing what's happening for other people, what's happening in the world around you, if you are to carry out your goal of saying something that would be of service. In the process, you're harnessing your mind and your heart to the desire. If you approach it the other way, for instance, if you try to, in some way, purify your heart, hoping that if you do, something good will come out of your mouth, or if you approach it from the standpoint of, I've really got to get to the bottom of what's wounded inside me, right? So I have, the thought might be, I have whatever wound it is that I think I have, from out of my past, from my upbringing, or wherever it came from. And I have to heal that wound so that what I say can be creative. Well, there's some truth to that. But have you noticed that people who approach it that way never seem to come to the point of being responsible for what they say? And the wound that you're trying to heal seems to never get healed. I've noticed that. That's why I'm talking about it, I suppose. And I would say the same goes for spiritual practice. If a spiritual practice is only paying attention to the spiritual state or the consciousness of the individual who's practicing it without regard to the mindfulness of what's being expressed and embodied, so what's being spoken and what's being acted upon in the world, that spiritual practice, in the end, is likely, I believe, to be ineffective in some real spiritual upliftment and transformation and even transmutation for the person. So that's the supposition I'm putting out here. And that's my understanding of kind of a bottom line message of that piece of Martin's. I think a lot of what's spoken about in mindfulness practice goes to awareness. But I'm suggesting that this is a mindfulness practice that includes awareness of self and others and the environment, but also mindfulness about what you might call the art of living, or the art of expressing and embodying yourself in every moment of your life in the most creative way possible. And that is not only something that has the practical benefit of bringing creativity into your world, but it changes you. It changes you like nothing else. So that is my big proposition here tonight. So at this point, I want to invite us to break up into small groups, and I will put the directions for the various things we're going to do in the small groups in the chat. But I'll read them to you here now. So the first round is, share an experience you've had of someone's words impacting you in a negative way. So what was that like? The second round is share an experience you have had of someone's words that impact you in a positive way. And then that'll be followed by simply a dialogue of what factors do you think go into whether words have a negative or a positive impact? What factors do you think go into whether words have a negative or a positive impact? Looks like probably Jim has put it in the chat for you there. And let's see, how about groups of four? Jim, are you in position to break us out into groups of four?
Yeah, do you still want 20 minutes or?
No, let's do 15 minutes. We'll do 15.
All right. 15. All right, ready to go.
That was a pretty rich conversation.
Yeah, that was a rich conversation. We didn't make it much past the first round.
But, we had everybody do all three at once. But we had to hurry at the end. Yes, we had to hurry at the end. Yes, it was very, very enriching.
Yeah. All right, so here's what we'd like to do for the remainder of the time. We'd like to address this question, and there are four of us who'd like to address it. What factors do you think go into whether words have a negative or a positive impact? So four of us are going to talk to that, Cece, Jane, Oren, and me. So Cece, over to you.
Thank you, David. Well, when I first took this into consideration, for me is like, and I know I've become more and more mindful of this, is like, what is the energy that I want to bring to this situation? You know, I practice awareness. That is a factor, an awareness of what's happening in my field, what's happening in myself. So bringing that awareness and really being as best as I can, you know, sometimes it can be hard when you're triggered with something. Then you can see where those emotional responses and the words that come out bring a negative impact. So for me, I think the intention that I bring, some situations you have the ability to kind of prepare for. You know, you're going into a difficult situation. And for me, I think a factor of whether it goes negative or positive is how much I want to approach that with love and how I'm going to bring peace, how I'm going to say this where it doesn't feel like I'm blaming someone or trying to, you know, own my own stuff. Those are all pieces of some of the factors. I mean, those are just a few. I mean, we're all going to touch on different things, but I think mindfulness and really the energy that we're holding, the emotional energy that we're holding in the moment really is what is the factors of whether or not that communication is going to be negative or positive on the person. So that's me.
Thank you, Cece. I think one of the things that seemed consistent in my experience is whether or not I and the person I'm having the conversation with is respectful. We're respectful of each other and respectful of the state the person is in at the time. Because there are times that it's just the wrong time to say anything that might be a challenge or even a question, to ask a question that might be clear on your part, but the person is not in a position at all to hear, does have an effect on whether or not you're going to have a positive or negative impact. Another one is whether or not you have an agenda while you're speaking to the person. Like, are you talking to them because you want them to do something, you want them to change something, or are you talking to them because you're interested in them and want them to feel blessed? And you know, all those things could be happening at the same time, but being aware of what your motive is in the conversation does have an effect on what kind of impact you will have. Another one is, and this goes with where they're at, but if a person is tired or if a person is emotional, that has an impact on whether or not they're going to hear you and how they will hear you. Another factor is, do I care more about being right, or do I care more about the end result being creative? And I learned this word years ago. I've talked about it. It's called carefrontation instead of confrontation, where you approach a person because you care so much about what you share that you are aware something is in the picture that's not allowing the substance and the love to build. So you approach the issue because you care so much about the generation between you and the future of your relationship that you need to speak about something so that the caring and the loving can continue unabated. Confrontation usually has more to do with an issue than it does to do with a person. So I think those are some of the factors that determine whether or not the impact will be positive or negative. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Cece. Thank you, David, for this wonderful topic and for our small group discussions. From where I'm coming from, we are unconditionally always existing in an ocean of spiritual activism. Whether that's spoken or unspoken, we are constantly emitting a spiritual activation that's moving into our field, that's moving into our relationships, and we magnify what's coming back to us through agreement. So like in the one law, there's radiation and response, but it's not the operant conditioning of like stimulus and response where that downward spiral comes in. So I love acronyms. So to me, the way that I like to think about whether my expression is in a place of spiritual activation and in agreement with divine being is to express through the acronym of the letters in the word THINK. So I don't know if you've heard this moniker before of THINK being, is our expression thoughtful, helpful, intelligent, necessary, and kind? So those letters of the word THINK, thoughtful, helpful, intelligent, necessary, and kind. Like, are my words thoughtful? Where in consciousness is this expression coming from? And who am I speaking to? Am I speaking to just a momentary situation where I need to vent? Or am I speaking to an eternal being? I'm thinking of like my children and the things that I've expressed to them as very small children, knowing that they, some of that may carry with them into adulthood. And when I was in third grade, I had a teacher who said, there are so many people in the world who just take up space. You know, I really want you to be someone who's dedicating your life to service in the world. And that was like such a spirit of activation that was given to a child, the younger version of me, at a very young age. And yet through agreement, through taking that in and carrying it forward, that spirit of service was imbued into us as children by a teacher in school. So is our expression helpful? Does it have the ethos of service? Is it respectful? Is our expression intelligent? Is it based on true sight? Is it based on real understanding? Is the power of prayer behind our calling for greater understanding for each other before the conversation happens? This is all part of the spiritual intelligence. Like the story that comes to mind around that one is in the Jewish tradition in Purim, we celebrate part of like Queen Esther is the hero of the Purim story. And the king wanted to commit genocide against all of the Jews. And when Queen Esther wanted to talk to the king, she didn't just go walking up to him. She fasted for 3 days. She prayed. And then she talked to the king. So there's this like real spiritual intelligence of spiritual preparation for a very necessary conversation. So thoughtful, helpful, intelligent, necessary. So, you know, when I come to the part of whether my expression is necessary, I'm always looking for what is it that I'm missing? What is it that I don't know yet? What is it that's at stake? And what is the trajectory that we are on before and after the conversation? And what has changed based on our activation of what we're emitting and based on our agreement of what we allow to enter our consciousness and our hearts about ourselves and about others and about the nature of reality? And then finally, is the expression kind? There's always room for compassion. Anything that comes across as anything less than compassionate will create its own barriers and its own walls. You don't need anybody else to do that because it happens on its own. And so the sense of non-judgment and, you know, in our group, what came up was like this sense of vibrational sensitivity. Like if someone is in pain or if someone's in a state of negativity, I can speak for myself and know that I feel that. I feel that in my body. I feel that pain. And rather than getting into the operant conditioning of stimulus and response of like, oh, I got to push this pain away or I got to blame somebody for it, I, as awareness, as a being of love, can have compassion for myself for feeling that pain and compassion for the other for being in that pain. And something starts to settle in transmuting the pain. And I'll end with one last example. When I lived on Kauai, going to college on the island of Kauai for a couple of years, and I was studying under a Tibetan Buddhist Lama. And one of the stories he told was, you know, if somebody says something negative to you, it's like them putting a knife in you. But what we most often do is not heal from that, but we tend to just take that knife out and then inflict that on ourselves again and again and again until we can awaken and let it go. So that comes back to activation and agreement. So if we're thoughtful, if we're in the Zen Udo state of being in our love and light body, there's no place of agreement for something like that to happen, and the flow of blessing can move unimpeded. I hope some of that was useful. So thank you, Alts.
Thank you, Oren. Wow, just wonderful. And Cece and Jane, too. So I really like reflecting on this as honestly as I can about what I found is important for me in this practice. So the first thing that comes to mind for me is the ability to keep my mouth shut. You know, there's that saying, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. So to establish some kind of control over my mouth, so I'm not just blurting out all the things that I think. You all would be shocked to know all the things I think that don't get out my mouth. So exerting that kind of control, and then that like influences my thinking because I'm giving my mind a job by not just blurting out whatever I might think to blurt out. I'm asking my mind to think about what would be creative here, or is there something creative to say, and then say that. So I think that's maybe the first thing that comes to mind. It's like if you're learning to drive a car, maybe before you do anything else, you ought to learn where the brake is. So that's the theory on that, I suppose. Another thing that I have taught myself over the years is something like this. How can I operate in a way that's unilateral? Like there's a bilateral thing going on in a relationship, talking to another person or group of people. So there's a relational thing, but how can I talk in a way or express myself in a way that has personal integrity as me? And how can I keep track of that so that what I say is true for me, it is the expression of me, And yes, I'm keeping track of how I relate to others and the impact on others, but I am not, what I'm first of all, simply being myself and being accurate to myself. And I'm not demanding in what I say that anybody else makes me happy to be myself. And I'm not blaming anybody else for what I'm thinking or feeling, or demanding that somebody else make me feel or think differently. So to me, that's important. I also think of this, quite some years ago, I realized how difficult it was for me to share myself with other people. And I suppose we're all different in that regard, made different. And in some ways that might be unique to me, but I suspect there's also something universal about it. But anyway, that was my experience. I realized that there was so much inside me that I hardly understood or knew that didn't get shared with people every day. It struck me as a big deal in my life. Like, how do I cultivate in myself the ability to share with people the important things that are inside me? And so that's been, I would say, a life journey, a life learning. I have found over the years that there's an element of heart to be shared through what I say, and that I had to learn to open my heart so that there was a flow of heart current through my words, not as something kind of artificial or like that, but simply as a way to share what's inside me. But I had to be willing to expose what's in my heart through my words if that was to work, if that was to actually happen, and if people were to be able to feel my heart in what I say. So I think that's been another facet of my learning. Maybe the last one is, over the last year, I guess I would say, I have reflected on how I present myself in groups of people and noticed that I was unduly passive in too many situations. So in too many situations, I was responsible for facilitating or conducting a meeting or some kind of session with people. And I was too passive in just letting whatever was going to happen, happen without finding some way to very proactively with my words facilitate the most creative thing that might happen and the productivity of us as a group of people. So I'm still in that journey, but I have proved to myself that I was right, that my assessment of myself was right, and that I had something to learn, and that I had to do better in terms of facilitating creative thinking and feeling together in a group of people. So we have just a couple of minutes more here. Hope you've enjoyed this exploration together. And what I'd like to do is simply open it up if there are two or three short comments from people.
Just what a rich topic, and just so blown away by everybody's sharing in that in the conversation. And what a perfect ending to today in what was shared at our community session this morning. So thank you all.
Something that came to me through what you were just saying, David, was something I heard years ago, that the ratio should be something like 7 parts love and 1 part truth. So let there be a generation of love between you, so that the truth can be spoken and the person is not bludgeoned. I mean, we're not always speaking truth to correct somebody, but if something needs to be addressed, making sure the atmosphere is filled with love so that it can be not only received, but seen as a blessing.
Reminds me of Toastmasters, when we did the analysis of somebody's speech We surrounded whatever criticism that we had or corrective measures that they could take with positive things. You did this so great, but da 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 da. But you did this so great, you know, so that it doesn't have to all be bad when you're telling somebody something that they need to hear.
We were taught that teaching too. We always called it a sandwich. Yeah, just sandwich it up.
What came to me on this topic of the impact of positive and negative is very aligned with what we talked about this morning about doing our individual work. Because when I'm connected to my truth and have a strong sense of self, which is very much my process here, going through full self-emergence, the negative words kind of ricochet off, you know, because it's what I believe, you know, and what I've built within. And then when someone says something positive, I was sharing the small group, it's a reinforcement of a truth that's already been internalized at this point. So that was my big takeaway, is it's really a reflection of the work I've done inside of myself, or what everyone does inside of themselves, so that the external, you know, is almost inconsequential at times if you have that strong sense of self.
Well, thank you, Melissa. Thanks all. I want to end with this, going back to Martin's supposition, that there's a spiritual practice of thoughtfulness, care, mindfulness around the words that we speak, both the spirit of them and the form of them. And that's a spiritual practice worth adopting, that it not only brings creativity into the world around us, but if we follow that, not just haphazardly, but as a spiritual discipline, it changes us. We become that person who expresses something creative, and we get changed in and through ourselves. So thank you all. Thank you for this truly glorious day, this victorious day. Love you all.
Love you, David.
Beautiful day.
Thank you, everybody.
God bless everyone. Good night.
Have a good day. Good night.
Ciao, ciao.
To see you all. Hi, guys.